Rumpole's Last Case, written by John Mortimer and read by Bill Wallace.
Rumpole and the Blind Tasting. Rumpole, how could you drink that stuff?
Perfectly easy, Erskine Brown. Raise the glass to the lips, incline the head slightly backwards, and let the liquid flow gently past the tonsils. I gave the man a practical demonstration. I admit I've had a good deal of practice, but even you may come to it in time.
Of course you can drink it, Rumpole. Presumably it's possible to drink methylated spirits shaken up with a little ice and a dash of Angostura bitters.
Erskine Brown smiled at me from over the edge of the glass of Côte de Nuit Village 79, which he had been ordering in his newly acquired wine buff's voice from Jack Pomeroy, before he settled himself at the bar. I couldn't help noticing that his dialogue was showing some unaccustomed vivacity.
I fully appreciate that you can drink Pomeroy's very ordinary, but the point is, Rumpole, why should you want to?
Forgetfulness, Erskine Brown. The consignment of a day in front of His Honour Judge Bullingham to the Lethe of Forgotten Things. The Mad Bull, I told him, as I drained the large glass of Chateau Fleet Street Jack Pomeroy had obligingly put on my slate until the next legal aid check came in, constantly interrupted my speech to the jury. I am defending an alleged receiver of stolen sugar bowls. With this stuff, not to put too fine a point on it, you have a reasonable chance of getting blotto. It is a good few years now since I adopted the habit of noting down the facts of some of my outstanding cases, the splendours and miseries of an Old Bailey hack, and those of you who may have cast an eye over some of my previous works of reminiscence may well be muttering, plus ça change, plus c'est la même chose, or words to the like effect. After so many cross-examinations, speeches to the jury, verdicts of guilty or not guilty, legal aid checks long-awaited and quickly disposed of down the bottomless pit of the overdraft at the Caring Bank, no great change in the Rumpole fortunes had taken place. The texture of life remained much as it always had been, and would, no doubt, do so until after my positively last case, when I sit waiting to be called on in the great circuit court of the skies, if such a tribunal exists. Take that evening as typical. I had been involved in the defence of one Hugh Snakelegs Timpson. The Timpsons, you may remember, are an extended family of South London villains who practice crime in the stolid, hard-working but not particularly successful manner in which a large number of middle-of-the-road advocates practice at the bar. The Timpsons are not high flyers. Not for them the bullion raids or the skilled emptying of the Rembrandts out of ducal mansions. The Timpsons inhabit the everyday world of purloined video recorders, bent logbooks and stolen cortinas. They also provide me and my wife Hilda, known to me quite off the record and occasionally behind the hand as she who must be obeyed, with our bread and butter. When prospects are looking bleak, when my tray in the clerk's room is bare of briefs, but loaded with those unpleasant-looking buff envelopes doshed out at regular intervals by Her Majesty the Queen, it is comforting to know that somewhere in the greater London area, some Timpson will be up to some sort of minor villainy, and, owing to the general incompetence of the clan, the malefactor concerned will no doubt be in immediate need of legal representation. Hugh Snakelegs Timpson was, at that time, the family's official fence, having taken over the post from his uncle Percy Timpson, who was getting a good deal past it and had retired to live in Benidorm. Snakelegs, a thin, elegant man in his 40s, a former winner of the Mr. Debonair contest at Butlin's holiday camp, had earned his name from his talent at the tango. He lived with his wife, Hetty, in a semi-detached house in Bromley, to which Detective Inspector Broom, the well-known terror of the Timpsons, set out on a voyage of discovery with his faithful detective, Sergeant Cosgrove. At first, Inspector New Broom had drawn a blank at the Timpson home. Even the huge coffin-shaped freezer seemed to contain nothing but innumerable bags full of frozen vegetables.